All right, what is up, everyone? This is the Detroit Lions News Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Chapp, along with my co-host, Tyler. And we obviously are doing the NFC Championship recap. We'll do the season recap in another one. But we got to get to this whole NFC Championship game because, in my mind, now Tyler might agree with me. He might not agree with me. But where this whole game went wrong, in my opinion, is the second half. And we all know that the second half has been kind of like an abundant of misfortunate errors all throughout the season. I mean, you go in the third quarter and there's games where they didn't score no points in the third quarter. You had the Tampa Bay game where the Rams game where you scored 3 points in the third quarter. It comes back to this. I'm going to say it like this, Tyler, and you're probably going to agree with me. You might not. We'll see what happens. But I felt like the Lions let off the gas. And I felt like the Lions really did themselves a disservice because they were dominating the 49ers in the rushing game. Dominating them. To the point where the 49ers were like looking like, what the hell is going on? And at that point in time, we could talk about how the 49ers went in the half. They made some adjustments. That's fine. That's fine. You're going to make adjustments when you get bullied like that. But the fact of the matter is this. When this team came out, they ran the ball a couple times. And I know the Jahmyr Gibbs fumble happened. I know it happened. But here's the thing. They came out with a different game plan than they had in the first half. And I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was arrogance. I don't know if it was trying to outsmart yourself. Trying to look smarter than you are. You were dominating on the ground. You didn't need to pass the ball. You could have just ran the ball, bully ball, like the Michigan Wolverines did against Penn State. You could have ran it every single time, and you would have been good. Now, there was parts in that game where I was happy. We could talk about the fourth down calls. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about a lot of different stuff. But, Tyler, what was your opinion on that?
All right. For all these people that are scared to lose Ben Johnson in the offseason, I hope this was a big, giant validation that we will be just fine. I'm trying to be cool, calm, collective here, man. I'm tired of watching this dude every single third quarter come out flat. He completely changes his game plan. They completely get unaggressive. We came out in this game exactly how we needed to. We punched him in the damn mouth. We were rushing the ball. We were hitting play action. We were cutting down the middle of the field. I mean, we were subbing in Monty and Gibbs, and they were getting a good 1-2. You know, we were feeding Laporta through the middle of the field. You know, Amon-Ra was cooking through the middle of the field. I mean, we got cute and got creative with J-Mo with that, you know, that 42-yard run to start the game. Like, that was might have been the best first half of Lions football I've ever seen, or really damn close. And so, yeah, man, I'm like, listen, please don't shit the bed. Please don't come out in the third quarter flat. Please don't do the Ben Johnson special. And what do? They come in and just completely get passive. It's like they try to come out in the second half and like they like try to like chew the clock like it's Madden, and then they just completely take their foot off the gas. And they aren't even like good design runs either. It's like very predictable script plays, like blasting it up the middle three times in a row and then doing some sort of weird screen or some sort of delay. It's like this weird script that they've got going on. And it's so fucking freaking frustrating to watch. It's difficult, man. We're trying to be, you know, family friendly here. But it's so annoying because teams pick up on that stuff. I mean, these are NFL teams. You're not going against a freaking FCS school. You're going against an NFL team. And every single week, it seems like the opposing team adjusts, and we don't, or we do adjust in the wrong way. It's so strange. Like, dude, it's frustrating. And we can obviously break down and go into this. But one play in particular that really pissed me off, it's like, we're losing momentum. We're on a 3rd and 6, and we take our star receiver and line him up in the backfield and run a freaking run up the gut. I'm like, are you stupid?
No, that's the thing that pissed me off because, okay.
Like, what are you doing?
I understand if you want to be, like, different, right? You want to have a different play. But the lineup, I'm not saying Brown, on a third and six, there is no practical play that you could say that that's a great play call on a third down. It's just not. That's no. Outsmarting yourself. Like, at some point in time, you got to take what the defense is giving you. If the defense is giving you these five-yard runs, take it all day long, man. Take it all day long. And I agree with the person in the comments. Steve, he says, we gifted the Super Bowl to San Fran. Monumental collapse, a lot of blame to go around. That's true. We gifted the San Francisco 49ers a Super Bowl appearance. And I feel like if the Detroit Lions would have won this game, I feel they would have won the Super Bowl. I feel like there is no team that's going to beat them the way that they played in the first half. Now, when they go into the second half, that's a different story. But right. I love all these people. I love all these people. These people talking about, oh my gosh, it was such a great year. It was a great year, but there was a chance to make it an even better year. You know, so that's what I look at with this team. There was so much better opportunities for this team, and the second half, it feels like they didn't even come to, like, they kind of expected the game to be won.
Exactly.
And it wasn't, that's not the way it works, especially with a team like San Francisco. We lost Tyler. Oh, there he is. I don't know what's going on with your stuff. But anyways, as I was saying, I don't feel like there's any team, you know, I know people were happy about the way this year ended. Well, not quite. They were happy with the results of this year. But I feel like it could have been a lot better if they would have just played the game plan. And me and you have talked about it ad nauseum. There's no other podcast that has talked about this. None. They're tangling. They're massaging Ben Johnson's balls, acting like he's the guru of gurus. I've told you. Me and you have said this. Third quarters are a distinct problem. And when you come out in the third quarter and you play the San Francisco 49ers or any great team, you play. That's what happens with when you play great teams. They play throughout the game. What you dealt with the 49ers, you are beating their ass. And then you came out in the third quarter like you usually do. You lay an egg. Then we can talk about the Kendall Vildor play. That guy, what a bum he is.
It literally hit him right in the freaking face, dude. I'm like, you are an NFL player. I joked about that with my friend. I said, look, I understand that it's tough, right? I mean, I played football. I played cornerback, so I even know the struggle of playing DB. But, like, bro, you are in the NFL, which means you are at, like, the pinnacle of talent at your position in this specific sport. And that is the second time I have seen this dude let a ball hit him in the face.
What about Cam Sutton? He got to eat. Here's the other part that pisses me off about this game, and I know this is like our initial reaction to the whole thing, but Brock Purdy should have threw three interceptions. There were three interceptions that should have been caught. There was an interception at Cam Sutton. I don't know what he was thinking. Now that could happen. Vildor, he was in position and he just didn't even get his hands up. Like, you let Brock Purdy, who I respect as a quarterback because he does do the right things to win games, but at the same time, he was trying to give you the effing game. He was trying to give you the game. And at that point, you should have taken it. Now, the Lions didn't take it. 49ers came back from, you know, to what, down, they were down 17, and they stormed back. And then you scored a meaningless touchdown at the end. That was the only points that you scored in the second half. You had five total drives. I think the play that really turned this whole game around was the Jahmyr Gibbs fumble. I think that turned the game around.
Yeah, and you know what kind of sucks too is it's like they immediately sub him out and kind of bench him or whatever. Like, let the kid get an opportunity to, like, shake that off. Like, you're always preaching about, like, you know, letting guys be able to, like, rectify their mistakes and stuff like that. But, like, dude, like, there was so many errors all the way around that just, like, listen, there were a lot of plays on the players. Yeah, I'm not going to be one of those guys that said, like, oh, the players all played great. It was a total coaching blunder. Like, Josh Reynolds immediately just unfortunately just learned, like, forgot how to catch. I don't know. Obviously, I'm sure we can, like, we'll talk about that. But, you know, little things like that and a mirage of different plays. And then on top of that, definitely some questionable coaching opportunities. It shows that we're a young team. We have a young coaching staff. And, you know, I do know it's hard to win this league. And I know Dan Campbell made some comments about, like, this may be our only shot. But we're definitely not – we don't think so. And we're definitely going to try to get back there. But, like – you can just tell that, like, you know what? If we run it back with the same squad and we start getting some really nice pieces either in free agency or through the draft, or obviously both would be the hope, like, there's no reason that, like, we can't get back to this position. So, like, I'm not super-duper concerned and worried because I think we're ahead of schedule. But, man, like, for the chips to fall how they fell and, like, for us to get an opportunity, it was a – really good opportunity that we passed up. And the hard part about it is not that, like, we didn't come out and get our ass whooped by the Niners. We didn't come out and get stomped out, and we didn't come out and get outmatched. Like, we came out there guns blazing and, like, just had a total collapse, like, meltdown, dude. Like, for all you, like, SOL sayers, this is your one opportunity, I guess, if you want to brag about something weird. This was like a total typical Lions meltdown, but you know what? It happened in a game that we haven't been to in 30-something years. So, you know what? It just sucks that it had to be that way, but we are a young team. We are a young coaching staff. And, yeah, I mean, there's just one too many mistakes that kept us from the Super Bowl, and it just sucks that it had to come at this time of the year. So, just unfortunate. Well,
let's just say what it is. These SOL people, they're dumb as box of rocks.
Well, it's just weird because people, like, they almost wait for moments like this to be like, see, I told you so. See, I told you so. Is that so? I'll say, like, oh, so you want to root for our downfall to prove yourself right? Like, what a loser.
No, that's exactly what they do. They're a bunch of idiots and morons, and they're not really that smart. They're just there to, like, they're one of those people that, like, you get a new car and they're like, your car sucks. It's not a Corvette. And it's like, dude, I'm 25. Like, how am I going to get a Corvette? You know what I'm saying? Right. And it's a 50-year-old being like, yeah, you suck. Like, I had a Corvette 25. Well, I'm sorry, dude. I'm sorry. But it's like, for me, like, the whole thing about this game was, like, we're going to talk about the critical coaching decisions that happened. But in my opinion, I feel like this game really turned in the third quarter when they kind of came out non-aggressive. And we talked about it, that Amon-Ra St. Brown handoff on 3rd and 6 was the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, when I was watching it at my girlfriend's parents' house. So I was, like, trying to be, you know, controlled or whatever. And I'm watching it, I'm like, I wanted to scream, what the effing F is this, dude? Like, this is total bullshit that they actually tried to do this. Because, number one, we've seen them do it before. But the fact of the matter is this. It's purely simple. Dave Montgomery, Jahmyr Gibbs, they were having a great game. You didn't need to take you didn't need to play this too cute. Let's get Amon-Ra St. Brown in the backfield. I guarantee you, if you would have had David Montgomery back there and you would have ran the ball, I guarantee you would have been a 4th and 1.
And then, I saw that play. I saw him in the backfield, and I literally turned my head away and I started shaking my head. I already knew. I'm like, dude, like, and then I'm like, okay, maybe that's, like, some sort of, like, trickery, like, pass play, like, get him from the, like, out of the backfield and, like, a swing route or a wheel route. And I saw them hand it off to him up the middle, and I'm like, what the hell are you doing, dude? This Amon-Ra is, like, 6 foot, 100 and, you know, 90 pounds.
I mean, he's ran the ball before.
Yeah, but not in a critical third down.
But you pick your time when you do that. That'd be great on a first down, right? You want to do that on a first down, all for it. You want to do that on a second down and, like, 5, all for it. But when you do it on a 3rd and 6, that's just stupidity. That's coaching malpractice. And another one that I had a problem with was on the goal line late in the game where they had to burn a timeout because they ran the ball. Like, I just thought that was totally, totally dumb.
Now, yeah, and then the next play, you're going to throw it in an awesome freaking catch from J-Mo.
And, like, J-Mo had a great game.
Yeah, and, like, dude, like, Why did even the announcers were like, okay, they're going to run this. They better get it, because if they don't, there goes a timeout and there goes more time off the clock. I'm like, dude, like, I mean, yeah, it's still a long shot at that point, but like, dude, you just gave up your entire chances for any sort of like miracle play, you know?
So we were talking about that 3rd and 6, right? And I want to show you something. This is a running back comps. Okay. So Dave Montgomery was averaging 6.2 yards per carry. Okay. 6.2. So that 3rd and 6, he had a very, based on his yards per carry, he had a very good chance to get that 3rd and 6 based on the yards per carry. You know, he wasn't like his longest rush wasn't like long, but he was just battering ram. Boom, 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 boom. And I felt like when they did that stupid stuff with St. Brown, I felt like that was the beginning of the end. It was over. And I was kind of still in my feelings. And I'm still in my feelings right now. But the fact of the matter is this. We'll transition into this now. I didn't have a problem with the fourth down calls.
No, what was strange, though, is like the one fourth down, we came out and empty. And yeah. it was a 4th and 2. And I'm like, you know, like, it's shit like that, man, where it's like, you know, look, Monty's averaging 6.5 yards per carry. I don't even hate passing, but to just give up the complete idea of any sort of that we could run the ball and just and that's multiple times that Ben Johnson has decided to come down in the empty backfield on 4th and short. And I'm like, I don't understand it, man. You have to give the illusion of a run, because they are going to – if not, they are going to put everybody out in the coverage, and they are guarding all the short routes. And they are, I mean, you know, on that play, I mean, it was, you know, it was a good pass, good play. Josh Reynolds forgot he has hands. So that's unfortunate. But, like, dude, I don't want to see someone coming out and empty in 4th and 1 or 4th and 2. I don't.
No, I do have a problem with that. I think when you go empty on 4th down or at the goal line, I feel like if you're a pass rusher, like I know you played corner, but I played defensive end. And when you play defensive end and you see an empty set, you're not, especially when it's a guy like Goff, okay? If it's a guy like Lamar Jackson, you're kind of like leery. If it's a guy like Josh Allen, you're kind of like perked up, like, what is he going to do? Scrambling sure. The ball. But when it's Jared Goff, the one thing that you're not worried about is his legs. So you're going to pin your ears back. You're going to rush the passer, and you're going to have a reckless abandon. I feel like when you go empty set, there's only 4 quarterbacks in the league you can go empty set with. There's only 4. It's Allen, it's Jackson, it's Mahomes. And then this guy, I think he's pretty mobile and he does a damn good job. It's Justin Herbert. So
yeah, you could argue a couple guys, like maybe like Kyler, you know, just because he's got speed. But
well, Kyler, it's just he fits behind everything. He's like a little buddy, you know. Just fits behind everything. So, look, there's only 4 quarterbacks in the league that could do that, right? You could do that with. And I hate the empty set. And I feel like if you're a quarterback like Jared Goff, especially on a third critical 3rd down, empty set is like the dumbest thing in the world. Like yeah. you better have a lot of pass protection back. You know, you better have like your linemen and max protect. And I feel like they just didn't do that. And I felt like it was a stupid decision by them. Especially with the way that they went about it. But, you know, my whole feeling about this is I feel like we go into the offseason. I know a lot of people – I know I took a little bit of flack for this, but I know people want to get a corner. I know people want to get an edge. Even Tyler was like, what the hell are you talking about, okay? What are you talking about? You want a kicker. We need to get a kicker that Dan Campbell trusts. Because when we look at Michael Badgley, he was 9 for 20 on his career from 48 plus yards. Worst among high volume kickers in NFL history. Okay. So don't think that played into Dan Campbell's psyche. Like they were outside. Michael Badgley hasn't kicked outside since 2022 in an NFL football game. Okay. So that tells you everything you need to know. Like you need to get a kicker. I don't care if you got to call Matt Prater. I don't care if you got to trade for a kicker. You need to get a kicker bad. And the one thing that Brett Holmes has screwed up royally is the kicking position. Enough with this Riley Patterson bullshit. Enough with Michael Badgley. get someone that Dan Campbell could be like, it's 40 yards, go out there. You know what I'm saying? Right. I feel like in that game against the Rams where he kicked that 48 yarder, I felt like if they weren't at home, he's not kicking it. I felt like if the Lions were at home, he would have kicked the ball. But I felt like outdoors, he feels different. And he must see some stuff that we don't see in practice that he sees outside. That he's like, oh, boy. And I don't care, you know. And I'm like, you know, you get the people that are saying, well, it was not windy and it was 75 degrees. Guys, it don't matter. The outdoors are the outdoors. You know, it could be windy 1 minute and then not windy the next minute. Just a little breeze can, like, throw you off. And the best kickers in the NFL, you see Justin Tucker miss kicks sometimes. You know what I'm saying? You see kickers miss kicks. So it's not – and when you got a kicker that you think is unreliable, I mean, that's a huge portion of the game.
Justin Tucker miss is pretty rare. I wish we would have had him, Jesus. But, no, man, I agree. I mean, we do need a kicker. I really wholeheartedly think that we were targeting Moody last year, but the Niners went in the third round and got him, and he's had his struggles as well. I mean, he missed a 40-some yarder against
us. I'm going to tell you this right now.
This game.
You got to go sign a kicker.
Yeah.
You are not in the position to draft a kicker.
Yeah.
And I feel like if it was 2 years ago and you drafted a kicker, maybe you drafted the kid that went to Cincinnati. Right, that kid that what's his name?
McPherson.
Oh, that'd be great. You know, there's a couple kickers in this draft. I like Mevis and a couple others, but Reichert from Alabama. But the reality of the situation is this: you're in a win now mode. Okay.
Yeah. Veteran. You need a vet.
You need a guy who's reliable, who's got a career, and like I know people don't think there's such a big kind of step up from college ranks to be a kicker. It's huge. It's absolutely huge. The dynamics are different. You're not kicking off of I think there's like a platform some of them kick off in college. It's way different. You know what I'm saying? And it's a different ball.
Well, it's less pressure. It's a bigger ball. There's a lot. You know, there's a lot to it. I mean, the guys screaming off the edge to come try to block you are bigger, faster, stronger. Man, it's just like, man, I wish we could get – I mean, I shouldn't even say we could get lucky at the kicking position because we had back-to-back, like, you know, really, really good kickers, Jason Hansen and
Matt Prater. It just works out like you're good right now.
But
and you don't got a kicker.
Like, get creative. Like, look at the Cowboys, dude. Look at Brandon Arbery or whatever. Like,
well, that's what someone said in the comments.
A monster.
Ken Fisher said the Cowboys seem to find one. And that's what I'm saying. The Cowboys found Brandon Arbery. He was a soccer player. You know, they found him off the streets. He was in the USFL, and the guy didn't miss many kicks at all. I mean, I think he missed, like, one. Like, the guy was money.
To start his career, he was, like, 48 for 48 in his career to start or something. It was nuts.
That's what you're looking for, man. Like, I think if you had a kicker that Dan Campbell trusted, I feel like he would have threw him out there. But you know how Dan Campbell is with the trust factor? You know, there's times where he should put, you know, he didn't put J-Mo out there because he didn't fully trust him. You know, they was on that limited snap count. And then, like, you know, you had players that like James Houston that could have came back last week that he held out because he couldn't trust him in the game because he didn't know if he could go through the full game. I felt like this was the same way. I felt like, you know, if Dan Campbell had a kicker, this wouldn't have happened. I firmly believe that.
It's just tough, man. There's definitely some holes in this roster. What did that say?
It says U.S. Swifty, bro. That's Amar. He'd be wilding out.
No Taylor Swift fans here, man.
She's all right. I like to think coach means. Steve says I like to think coach means by commenting only shit with tons of particular group of guys and coaches like that. Going back to your comment about, you know, that they might not get back here. There was a comment I was looking at. Oh, it's Ken Fisher. He said, turning point in my eyes was after they came down the field, open up the third quarter with a field goal. We turned around, went back down the field and on a fourth down. Yes, I've heard it. Maybe we should have kicked the field goal, but yes, the one that turned the game around was the Josh Reynolds in his hands in the drop. and they came down and scored a touchdown, fumbled, scored a touchdown, and that was a tie score. I mean, that's what I say. Like, when Reynolds dropped that ball, that was not good news, man.
The first one, it was like, it was a tough catch, but you have to catch that. That second one hit him square in the freaking chest, dude.
Man.
Like, that is tough, bro.
I'm trying to pull it up, but I think if I remember correctly,
those are the kind of plays that like fuel the conspiracy theorists that the NFL is like rigged. Because like, dude, how does a ball smack you square in the chest plate when you're wide open and like you've made that catch hundreds of times? Come on, man.
Yeah, I think it's I'm trying to pull it up right now on the Pro Football Focus. Hold up. But no, I looked at how many drops they had, and I was like, "Oh my god, dude! Like this is just ridiculous." Like,
let me. 16. Or no, that was the drop tackle. No, that was the missed tackles. My bad.
That was way different. Yeah, that was way different. Okay, so they had
Jesus, if they have 16 drops, that would have been that would have been crazy. Holy cow!
They had two official drops.
It had to have been, they're pretty generous on some of those, though, man.
Josh Arnold had two drops, and his drop percentage was 66.7, which is god awful. But yeah, that was crazy. But okay, let's get to Ken. This is something we got to hit on, Tyler. We'll transition into this now. What's your guys' thoughts on Chauncey Gardner-Johnson during the interception of all things this year? To me, that's what pissed me off. I know you got a personal agenda with Debo. Come on and talk about the dumbest thing you could do during a game.
See? Yeah, man. I mean, I just – you let your emotions get in the way, and that's exactly what we talked about. You want a guy that's like that, but in the right moments, and that was not the right moment to do that. That's bullet board material. That's fuel. And, like, you're out here waving to the crowd, waving them goodbye, being cocky, doing this and that, and you're out here, like – you're missing tackles and you're getting beat. I don't mind a guy that's cocky and can back it up and do it in the right way. But like, dude, you look like a clown when you do stuff like that. And all of a sudden, like Debo starts like whooping your ass. And like all these other guys start like whooping up on you because they're like, you know, not really feeling the disrespect. So, you know, and then also like a momentum shift by, you know, all of a sudden you want to be a bonehead, can't control your emotions. Now you're playing on tilt and all of a sudden you give up 15 yards in a key moment of the game. Like, come on, man.
Here's the thing about the Chauncey Gardner-Johnson thing. Okay. I don't care about like what he did personally about the Debo thing. I think that was stupid as hell. Where I have a real problem with it is you talked all this shit. Right, you talked all this junk about how you were gonna smack Debo around and you were gonna make plays, bro. You had a lot of missed tackles. I think you had like four or five, if I'm not mistaken. Now the defense as a whole, they had 16, which is that's a recipe for losing too against the 49ers. But we'll get that in a minute. But I felt like if you're gonna talk your crap about to the other team. Right, you're gonna talk all this junk during the week, and you're gonna talk all this junk on Instagram. You better back it up. And the fact of the matter is this: he didn't back it up, and he got a personal foul. And that's just and waving to the crowd, like even the 49ers, they seen that, they heard about it, and that's probably what gave him fuel. Like you gave him the opportunity, you gave him the fire. They didn't need any fire to come back, and you're just giving it to him. Like, oh, waving. And that's kind of what I looked at when I was like, okay, they came out in the second half flat. Why? Why? Maybe it's someone like Chauncey Gardner-Johnson in the room saying, oh, we got this. No, you don't.
Well, and so, exactly. And it's like stuff like that. It's like, dude, like you can't be like, look, dude, like you can be Kobe Bryant or Michael Jordan talking shit and backing up and people aren't going to say anything. But when you're Kwame Brown talking shit and you're getting dunked on, you're getting big plays are getting up on you. Like, I understand being confident. I get talking crap. I get being this, I get being that, but like you have to learn when and where to use that stuff. And like getting in receivers' heads is one thing, right? You're on the line, hey, you know, you're a bop, you're a beep, you're a beep, you're this, you're that, you're soft, whatever, like talking shit in the game, whatever. But on the sidelines, being disrespectful, waving to the crowd, you know, trying to be cute, trying to be funny. Bro, that fuels the opposing team way more than it pumps up your guys. So, like, why do something like that when, like, the balance just doesn't weigh right on that? That's bulletin material. That's bulletin board material. That's going to piss them off. That's going to fuel them. It's not like by doing that, all your guys are like, yeah, yeah, wave harder, wave at them, man. That's great. Let's do that. We love that. Like, no, they don't get pumped up by you being a dumbass on the sideline. So, no, like, it's only negative.
It's only negative, and the only thing that can happen is, first of all, we haven't even gone in the second half. So you're basically like admitting that you think the game is over, which I think is totally it's foolery. But it's just it to me. I was more pissed at Chauncey Gardner Johnson because I feel like if you're gonna talk all smack all week long, you better back it up. You better back it up.
You have to.
You can't come into the game and miss five tackles. I mean, he was brutal. I don't care what anybody says. He was one of the most brutal players on that field last week today.
Absolutely.
And it was one of his worst Pro Football Focus grades of the year. Matt's, which is he's a Viking fan. He says, I saw Lions dominating the game with the run, keeping Goff from his mistakes. Goff didn't have any mistakes. But why did they get away from that in the second half? That's what we talk about. I mean, Tyler have talked about this ad nauseum. Ben Johnson outsmarts himself more than Ben Johnson outsmarts the opponent. That's just the reality. In the second
No, you're right. No, I'm just
in the second half. Ben Johnson is basically Jim Bob Cooter the later years. That's what he is. Because the fact of the matter is this: you scored 3 points in a playoff game against the Rams. You got very lucky to win that one. You really did. You scored 7 points in the third quarter against the Buccaneers. You beat them. You got away with that. You scored no points in the third quarter against the 49ers, and you cannot do that against the 49ers. All year long, they have not scored in the third quarter. And that's been the biggest issue. If you would have scored in the third quarter against the Green Bay Packers, do you think the game ends up different and you have home field? Absolutely. If you score in the third quarter against the Chicago Bears, does it end up different? Absolutely. There's been times this year where they have not scored in the third quarter, and it's led directly to a loss. And yesterday was one of those days.
Yeah, dude, you nailed it right on the head, and that's exactly it. And I'm getting pissed because you know what's annoying about that? If you watched the game, which I know most of you did, and I know you and I did, when we needed a score in the fourth quarter to try to make it a game, we marched down the field like the best offense in the freaking league. We did it with ease. We hit Sam Laporta on two in routes. We hit Amon-Ra on a like midfield route. We got out of bounds on a Laporta out route, and we got a JMO touchdown. We needed to score. We marched down the field like it was literally nothing and scored a touchdown within 2 minutes when they were guarding the pass.
Right.
So that just tells me all I need to know, because what that tells me is that we are not unable to score. We are not unable to march down the field. You just wanted to be cute, and you wanted to get annoying, and you wanted to try to be the smartest guy in the room and do this and that. Because you know what? If we were doing that, if we were marching down the field and scoring a touchdown when they were trying to defend the pass, so, you know, there's no one in the box because we're not running the ball in the fourth quarter, and all of a sudden you march down there and score with ease, you're like, why the hell were we not doing that in the third, in the late third, the early fourth, the mid fourth, the late fourth? Like, dude, if you have the ability to do what we just did in the final drive and score with freaking ease, why the hell didn't you start doing that earlier? What, do you want to save it till the end so we could look fucking cool and score at the end?
And that's the problem I have with Ben Johnson. Because all year long, I mean, let's be honest, that Chicago game at home, we got very lucky to win that game.
And it's because
they turned it on in the fourth quarter. And, like, I get it, you could do that against the Bears. I get it, you could do it against some of these teams. But next year, if Ben Johnson's here, he's got to learn, because next year in the NFC North, it's going to be the toughest division in football. You're going to be playing a first-place schedule. You're not going to get away with the lackadaisical third quarters you got away with this year. and you got it. It got shown to you in the playoffs. I mean, like you said, they went down the field in a passing situation, bro, and they moved down the field. They moved down the field. So don't tell me that it was, oh, the 49ers were just scheming the right thing, bro. This offense can move at a dime. And the fact of the matter is this: they have not scored in the third quarter in very many games. There's games where they score like a field goal or something, but there's been very rare games where they scored a touchdown, and that's something that you really can't just shy away from, man. Like, I know people want to anoint Ben Johnson as like this goat and everything, but the fact of the matter is, like, this is a reality. Everyone bags on Aaron Glenn. Now, Tyler was one of these people. He was one of these people too. He bagged on Aaron Glenn too. But the fact of the matter is this: Aaron Glenn has nowhere near the horses that Ben Johnson has. Nowhere near. Ben Johnson's driving a Ferrari and Aaron Glenn is driving a Taurus. Yeah. Who's going to win?
And I've come around to that, man. I know, like, you know, and Aaron Glenn is, you're right. I mean, he's dealing with scrap parts.
He's got Kendall Vildor as his starting corner. You want to see how bad these guys were? You want to see how brutal these corners were? Kendall Vildor, 7 targets, 5 receptions, 95 yards. He gave up. He was 3 for 2 on Debo, 2 for 1 on Brandon Ayuk. Cameron Sutton, again, 77 yards per reception, 9.6, 11 targets, 8 receptions. I mean, at some point, it just gets unbelievable that this is even the case. And if you look at the full stats, I mean, look at this. They were 6 for 12 on third down efficiency. You know, you were winning the time possession until the fourth quarter. Passing yards, literally identical, 258 to 263. The issue is you gave him the fumble, which was huge. And then, you're not making an interception when it hits you in the face mask. Like, I have so much problems with the way that they played defensively in terms of not focused enough, in my opinion. I felt like there were, you know, the interception that Cam Sutton could have made, that would have been huge. I felt like Kendall Vildor, if he would have used his freaking hands and not his face, it would have been an interception. And that was a critical point in the game, man. You that play alone, I'm convinced of this. That play alone was a momentum builder that they were not coming back from.
Yeah, no, it absolutely was. And not only that, it's like the lack of awareness. Like, if you know that you can't catch a ball, you have to do anything and everything you can to make sure that is swatted out of complete range of the receiver. And you can't afford to do that against guys like Brandon Ayuk. I know people don't realize Brandon Ayuk is an all-pro.
Right.
He made the all-pro team this year. Right. Like, that dude is no joke. I mean, they forget about him because Debo's there and they got McCaffrey, but like, Ayuk is no joke. And so you can't give these guys any sort of chance. And it's frustrating because I'm not going to sugarcoat it anyway. If the ball hits you in the freaking face, you should be able to make a play on it. Holy shit, dude. It hits you in the face.
And it's just so happens that your best players didn't show up to play. It was one of Hutchinson's worst Pro Football Focus grades of his career. Was one of Chauncey Gardner-Johnson's worst Pro Football Focus grades of his career. It was Cameron Sutton's second worst Pro Football Focus grade of, and that Pro Football Focus grades are not the end all be all, but it sure seemed like it. You know, because Hutch, there was a lot of he was basically non-existent after the first half. And it was like, and you know, one guy, we talked, Houston coming off injury. I mean, obviously he was a no-show on defense, but it was a comedy of errors. I don't think you can pin this loss on one person. Like, it's a coach's fault. It's Reynolds' fault. Because it took a collective effort to lose a game like this. It wasn't just one person. It was a boatload of them. Yep. Dan Campbell, Aaron Glenn, Ben Johnson, I feel like the only person that gave this team a chance to win was Jared Goff. And for anybody, and I'll tell you what, this will be on a show when we go to the off season with the season recap next week. But if there's any person that wants to talk to me about not re-signing Jared Goff, you can go straight to hell. I'm dead serious, dude. Because the fact of the matter is this: Jared Goff has put you in a good position to win. And I know Jared Goff is not this prototypical quarterback that you would build in Madden, like you think that, you know, Hendon Hooker is, or you think that you want to get next Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen. The fact of the matter is he's a good quarterback that can lead you to the promised land. You just have to make the right decisions. The coaches have to make the right decisions, and you have to block. So,
yeah, no, I mean, and the crappy part about that is, and I got my laptop up here, just kind of looking at, you know, some of the numbers and some of the stats, some of the contracts and stuff. Like, you're going to have to, looking at some of these AAVs for some of these quarterbacks, you kind of wish you would have done this, this contract extension last offseason, because the price just went up. You were one game away from the Super Bowl. You know, there's some whispers and some reports about, you know, Jared Goff being, you know, one of the higher paid QBs in the league moving forward on their next contract extension. But you know what? Today's price is not yesterday's price, and I can't blame him or his agent, because you know what? He's proved that he can be the guy, and he is the guy. And I mean, the guy is getting freaking Jared Goff chance in Little Caesars Arena. The guy's getting Jared Goff chance for the Pistons. The dude at college games. I saw on Twitter, this man, they were chanting Jared Goff at a freaking grocery store in Detroit. And I'm I've never heard a chant break out in a grocery store, bro. I mean, this dude is getting love left and right, and he deserves it. He's a really good dude, and he's a good player, and he's a leader. I mean, he's a guy, yeah. Man. He and you know what? From as much as we talk about this, from being a cast off, a throw in, a this or a that, like, he's, you know, and even Dan Campbell, I remember when he first got here, Dan Campbell threw Jared Goff under the bus all the time.
Yep.
Like, constantly, bro. Like, I'm pretty convinced that at the beginning, Dan Campbell didn't want nothing to do with Jared Goff, but Brad Holmes was like, this is the quarterback and you're going to like it. And Dan was like, you know what? Fine.
I felt like sure. It grew on. I felt like, because I was heard what Andrew Whitworth said. You know, Andrew Whitworth was the left tackle for the Rams. And he was with them with their Super Bowl with Jared Goff, and he was with their Super Bowl with Stafford. And he said, you know, there's just certain things that he wasn't getting in LA that he's getting in Detroit now, you know. And that's it's a testament to his character that he got better. But here's the thing, I talked about it last year. Like, sign this guy right now. Now you're gonna look at it. You're probably gonna spend $50 million to re-sign him. That's just the reality. I don't care. I don't care what anybody says. That's what you're gonna be spending, because if Russell Wilson's gonna get what, $48.5 million, Jared Goff's gonna get more. And you better hope you re-sign him before Jordan Love re-signs and Dak re-signs, because if that happens, the price goes up and up and up and up. And if I'm Jared Goff, I know people want him to take a hometown discount. I imagine he'll take a discount. I think he will. But at the same time, this is probably going to be his last big contract.
This is going to be his last big deal. I mean, you got do you and this is a business too, man. Like, do you expect the guy to be like, you know what, you love me, I'm going to sign for 3 years, $100 million, call it a day? No, hell no, man. This is his last chance at a good contract, you know. And I mean, dude, look, the Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes, to most people's eyes, and I know he's not a Patrick Mahomes, so don't get any crazy ideas, listeners, all right? I'm just saying, if Patrick Mahomes can get what's considered a crippling deal, and they're in the damn Super Bowl, Jared Goff's already making $35 million. If he gets a slight raise to 45 or 50, it's not going to be that, like, debilitating to our cap space. I mean, you're giving a guy a well-deserved raise. And I mean, literally, if we cut, and we'll get into this too, if we, in our kind of our offseason talk, if you are able to cut guys like Vitae and you get off of, you know, some of the Charles Harris and some of these bigger contracts, we're going to have $75, $80 million in cap. So it's not a huge deal. It's not the end of the world. Like, we are going to be okay. And we're going to have the space to pay these guys. And we're going to be able to do it. So, like I said, if you if you literally come off of just a few short players, if you literally get rid of, you know, some of that dead cap coming into this offseason, you know, you free up enough money to give Jared Goff a raise and still have 65, 70 million in cap. Like, it's a no brainer. We got one of the best cap guys in the freaking industry with Mike Disner, man. So we're good.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I always tell people, number one, the cap is going to go up, so you're not going to be worried about that. And every time a new quarterback gets a deal, it pushes your quarterback down lower. So that's what you got to look at. So historically, your starting quarterbacks have taken up 14 to 17% of the cap. Now, Mahomes is different. He's 18%. I think it's like 18.2 or whatever. But Mahomes is Mahomes. He's probably the Michael Jordan of quarterbacks right now.
Exactly.
Just being honest. And I think we'll get to this probably on our Super Bowl, in our season recap, because we'll probably talk about the Super Bowl in that one. But I think Patrick Mahomes is going to keep a lot of quarterbacks from getting rings. That's what I think he's going to be doing. But I think Jared Goff is the guy you got to pay. We both agree on that. I think there's a lot of people that are thinking, oh, well, we can go draft a quarterback, or let's go get someone that's, you know, an improviser. I mean, I was hearing on the radio, people were calling in saying, let's go get Justin Fields. Justin Fields? Bro, I understand Justin Fields could be a good quarterback, but there's people in Chicago that are questioning him. You know what I'm saying?
Well, the way I see it too, like Kirk Cousins is coming out and saying off of an ACL, or was it Achilles, whatever, he's coming off of injury, huge injury, and he's, what, 36? He's coming out saying, I want 2 years, $90 million guaranteed. He wants 45 per mil for the next 2 years.
Yeah.
I'm going to take Jared Goff over Kirk Cousins any day. You got Daniel Jones making 40, 45 million a year. I will take Jared Goff over Daniel Jones any day of the week.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, you got guys that, you know, that are coming, going to be commanding some big money. I mean, even if you say like on the lower end, I mean, if you got like, I think Stafford is I think Goff is a way better fit for this team than Stafford was. Right. Stafford's making 40-something million a year. Like, right. Aaron Rodgers is 41, and he's going to be making, you know, a shit ton of money every year. Like, Jared Goff, 29 years old, just turned 29, I believe, a few months ago, so 5-6 months ago. So, you know, he'll be 29 at the start of next season. He is, you know, he just got you to almost the biggest game in the league. And, you know, what, 30 touchdowns to 12 picks? Great leader, guys love him, and obviously we'll get into that during the offseason stuff and kind of go over contract values and AAVs. But I'm just basically saying, look, man, you got Kirk Cousins, Daniel Jones, blah blah blah, making that kind of money. There's no reason that you wouldn't feel uncomfortable giving that to a guy like Jared Goff, given what he's done this past three seasons with the Lions.
And I feel like if you don't feel that he could be the guy that could lead you to the promised land, especially after yesterday, I don't think you ever say anything unless you get Patrick Mahomes, which is not realistic. I mean, at all. And I feel like yesterday he played a great game. I feel like there was obviously some overthrows, some underthrows, but that's going to happen over the course of game. I mean, at least he wasn't like Lamar Jackson, where Lamar Jackson's going to win the MVP and he showed his ass on TV, literally. Because here's the thing. I don't care. You know, Eli Manning for years was kind of like a quarterback that was like underrated. You know, he wasn't like this elite quarterback, but he won two Super Bowls. So, and he was not mobile either. So that's all you need to know. Patrick Boyer.
Way more interceptions.
Oh, yeah. Patrick Boyer on the Facebook, he says, wasn't there a flag on Kendall Vildor's play? If so, was it likely a pass interference that would put it at the spot? It was picked up. Troy Jennings says, next year it's going to be so much harder for us to get back to this point. Even with the core we have, coach was right. Maybe this was the only chance these guys had, because coaches could be gone. We will lose and pick up different players this year, and it'll be a totally different story in a situation come next season. The North is not going to come to us as easy as it was this year. They're going to have to be in beast mode all year next season to even have hope of a shot at to get back to this point. And, you know, what Troy said there, that's true. It's totally true. You know, I think that we didn't get the easy way by no stretch of imagination. But at some point, you know, if they would have played the way that they did, and there was a team like like the Eagles or someone in this division where they could challenge them, I think they would have been a little bit of trouble. I mean, that's just the reality. I mean, they have to be better in the third quarter next year. They have to get better players. They have to get a number one cornerback and an edge to help out Aiden Hutchinson. And look, that's going to be a major key to this offseason.
Yeah, dude, we made it this far with such visible and obvious holes in this roster. Like, we're not losing anybody really of any importance. I mean, like, you got a couple guys you got to re-sign. Like, I think, like, Graham Glasgow is, like, a big guy that we should re-sign, yeah, like, on the low. You got, like, but, like, even, like, today, like, watch, like, you would have asked me 3 weeks ago if C.J. Gardner-Johnson, like, re-signing him was a big deal, and I would have said yeah.
Yeah.
But, this NFC Championship has changed a lot of opinions on him. So, like, you're not losing. I mean, you're gaining. I mean, you're gaining by subtraction. Again, and we talked about that the year before. How much did we gain by subtraction by letting some of these guys walk? We gained a lot. I mean, you know, you gain cap and you gain opportunities for other guys to step up and do well. I mean, we're going to hopefully be able to get rid of the Aquara brothers, Charles Harris, Vitae. You may be able to restructure some guys. You may be able to get like another Taylor Decker restructure. There's a huge list of guys that we're going to be losing, but none of them are really super key contributors. You know, so if you can re-sign the guys that are important and you got Brad Holmes going through the draft again, doing all this and that, like, we're basically, like, with our core guys, like, we're running it back, and it's going to be another year of experience for them, more film, more training camp, another year with their team, another year with their coaches, another year with their scheme. Like, we realistically, man, as long as we got the key pieces in place, like, we are good. I mean, and there's some things we need to take care of this offseason. You need to make Penei Sewell the highest paid offensive lineman in NFL history, and you need to keep him in Detroit for as long as you possibly can. You need to take care of Jared Goff and keep your quarterback position. You need to start working and talking on an Amon-Ra extension. And you need to be able to get some bargain deals on some guys that want to stay, that want to contribute and can contribute, like Rodrigo, James Houston, a couple of those guys. If you're able to get them on a deal so that we can keep some of these key contributors here at a cheap price, Jalen Reeves, Maben, then like you're doing really well. So there's a lot to go over, you know, this offseason, and I'm sure we'll go over every little bit of it. We got freaking how many months again until Lions football, so. But just to say, you know, basically is like, you know, sometimes players, like sometimes teams make these runs, but all of a sudden they got 8 of their key players coming up from free agency, 9, 10, 11 of their guys that they signed on cheap or not cheap, but signed on short-term deals or, you know, a championship deal. You know, you see some of these guys signing these guys or trading for these guys just to get them a little bit over the hump, you know, like the Niners or the Eagles. So the fact that we didn't really put ourselves in a poor position, we're pretty much saying, hey, we've got our team, we've got our guys, let's run it back and let's add to it. And, yeah, man, another full draft and another full free agency. Year 4 was always the year, Joe, right? I mean, that's what you said, man. Year 4 was always the year. So, hey, we were a year ahead of schedule. Let's come back next year and let's punch some people in the mouth.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, obviously, you know, 2 years ago we were – a year ago we were doing the pod and we were like, you know, if they could just win a playoff game, that'd be great. Well, we won 2, you know, so there was an incredible difference. And the credit, there is a lot of credit that goes to Dan Campbell and Aaron Glenn and Ben Johnson. I know we've been hard on Ben Johnson, but he did a pretty good job for the offense. I mean, it's top 5 units, so that was pretty good.
Right, he did.
We can go talk about his third quarters and be critical of those, but you know, Aaron Glenn, for the most part, he did a good job of we lost him. Aaron Glenn did a good job of using what he had. I mean, Kendall Vildor is not his starter.
Right.
You know, you got development out of Ifeatu Melifonwu. Brian Branch was a rookie. You know, Jack Campbell was a rookie. And you got a lot of mileage out of guys that, you know, you look at and you go, I mean, they're not that great players, but Aaron Glenn did a decent job. They're one of the top teams against the run, and for the most part yesterday they held Christian McCaffrey at will. Yep. And then when the dam broke, and that sucks. But you know, I look at it like this: I don't think that the off, I don't think the defense was it was is anywhere close to the offense in terms of talent. I feel like what Aaron Glenn did this season has been it was a really good job by him, and I can't say enough because I feel like people look at the pass yards and they're like, oh, this guy freaking blows. But like when you realize that like Cam Sutton was out there on an island because you had the blitz a lot because your pass rushers weren't getting home, that's an issue. You're leaving Cam Sutton on an island. Kendall Vildor for being a guy that they just picked up off the streets. I mean, he did a pretty damn good job.
Yeah.
I mean, Jerry Jacobs, for everyone that wants to call, you know, call him a trash gutter or whatever, he wasn't supposed to be the second string cornerback. It was supposed to be Emmanuel Mosley and Cam Sutton. And Cam Sutton, I think he was hurt for a little portion of the season. So I just feel like this team really did a damn good job this year. I'm not mad. I'm disappointed in the way that they lost this game yesterday. But overall, man, like, I'm not going to sit here and say that the Lions had, like, this bad year. You know what I'm saying? I'm not going to say
absolutely.
So it was a good year for the most part, but obviously there are some things that we need to fix up, and we'll get that done.
Yeah, man. I totally feel you.
P said Purdy had three or four. Ken Fisher said Purdy had three or four scrambles that broke our back on third down. We just couldn't contain him when we got pressure on him. He was able to scamper for first downs, especially in the fourth quarter.
Absolutely.
And that's kind of like another area of need that you probably want to get is probably like a defensive tackle that, you know, can stuff the middle for Lee McNeil to kind of use his pass rushing prowess. It's going to be an interesting offseason because there's a lot of ways that the Lions can go and a lot of ways that they can upgrade their talent. And we're going to talk about that next week in the season recap. But, you know, overall, man, like I look at this team and I look at this the way that it ended. It sucks the way it ended, but for the most part, I'm confident that this is a step in the right direction. And
absolutely.
I don't think we could sit here and say that it was a total disappointment. I'm not going to sit here and say that, but
I mean, look, dude, we're a dropped pass, two dropped passes or, you know, a field goal away from being in the Super Bowl. I mean, look, the game ended how it ended. You know, if we would have converted those, everybody would be praising Dan and freaking saying, oh my God, he's got the biggest nuts I've ever seen. He's the greatest coach I've ever seen. Like, I love this. I can't believe it. Dan Campbell for president. You know, hey, look, you're praised when it goes well. You're criticized when it goes bad. You know, I'm sure he didn't sleep much last night.
No.
I totally get it, man. And it's just kind of part of the job.
Right.
But you know what? This team is, bro, no coaching staff or front office in my lifetime I was ever confident that I could get this ship turned around. I mean, I didn't even know shit about Dan Campbell when he got hired. I was like, oh, cool, just a cool former player, random ass meathead. Like, great, this we'll revisit this in 3 years, in 2 years when he gets fired, you know, whatever. But no, dude, he came in here and he said, look, this is changing. This is changing now. We're going to get it done. Brad Holmes, Dan Campbell, Sheila Ford-Hamp, all these front office guys, Chris Spielman, getting Calvin back in the building, getting Barry Sanders back on the wagon for us, man. Like, it's taken a collective effort, and it finally feels like for the first time there is real change. So don't scream SOL. Don't be an asshole. Don't be a shitty fan. Like, don't be that guy, because you know what, dude? Like I said, I'm 28 years old, and I have never in my lifetime witnessed what we've been able to accomplish this year. And I really do think that we're ahead of schedule, and this is only the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, and I look at this. This is what I look at. These are – the Lions have 9 players age 23 or younger. Look at this list. You got
Penei. Those are all studs. Those are guys that all contribute.
You got Lee McNeil, Sam Laporta, Kirby Joseph, Aiden Hutchinson, Jack Campbell, Jameson Williams, Brian Branch, and Jahmyr Gibbs. I mean,
yeah, and Penei Sewell will be in the top of the list, being literally the best at his position, arguably in the whole.
Yeah, league. And you know, a lot of people are gonna sit here and they're gonna say, okay, like, what is Brad gonna do? Well, if you look at this class, I mean, what is Brad not gonna do? Right. I mean, the guy just drafts great players, and the fact of the matter is, when you got a good general manager, you get away with a lot of things. You get away with. Now they're gonna miss on some draft picks. That's gonna happen. You know, like a Levi Onwuzurike or a guy like, you know, we didn't see much of Broderick Martin this year, Antoine Green. But who's to say that they're not the next Ifeatu Melifonwu? You know what I'm saying? That's when you're a general manager, your whole goal is to build a team not just for the present but for the future. And I think that Brad Holmes has done such a great job at building for the future that they can afford to take risk in the present, in the free agency market, maybe trades, but they've done a good enough job in the draft where they can do that now because they have building blocks. Like you just seen that list. There's a ton of building blocks right there. And if Brad Holmes wants to go and risk it for the biscuit and go get an edge rusher in a trade or a cornerback in a trade, he's earned the right to do that because the way this team is set up for the future, I mean, you're eventually going to pay some of those guys. And that's
what I was going to say, too, is looking at that list, dude, 5 years from now, some of those players won't be here.
No.
Theoretically. No. I mean, you want to resign as many of those guys as you can, but there's probably a couple guys on that list that just inevitably will either won't be able to afford, or if they keep getting better and better and better and better, you know, they, like I said, we're not going to be able to retain some guys. So, like, you know.
Yeah, well. Lost you again, but what you said about what you were saying before you kind of dropped out. I don't know what's going on with the StreamYard today, or the podcast software, but you're not going to be able to pay all those guys. And the fact of the matter is, that means that you're doing a damn good job. You know what I'm saying? It means you're doing a damn good job drafting because there's a lot of teams that they can't do that. They just can't. And one of the things that got the Rams where they were this year was drafting. And that's where, you know, Brad Holmes came from. And getting a guy like Puka Nacua was huge. You know, getting a guy like Kobe Turner was huge. Byron Young was huge. You know, things like that, man, that's what matters. And when you got a good general manager, the sky is truly the limit, man. The sky is truly the limit on what you can accomplish, you know, through a 5-year period. Sky's the limit. Are you there? All right. Well, that's what I have to say. So let's get to one of the comments. You drop out again? Oh, Ken Fisher says he says, I would like to thank the Detroit Lions, the coach and the staff and players for an exciting, successful year. I had them at 12-5 and one playoff win. They exceeded my expectations. Also, I would like to thank you two guys for carrying on a show. Very educational, pretty much an awesome program for letting us not only celebrate, but also let our emotions feel free to release. Thanks again, guys. And we'll be doing this stuff throughout this offseason, so you won't be missing us. I think Walt will be doing his stuff too. But let's go back to our predictions for the season. Tyler, we could see you, so you're good. So I had the Lions at 12-5. Tyler had the team at 12-5. Mayank had the team at 12-5. Oh, no, you're not.
It says you're backstage.
No, you're not.
Oh.
Oh my god. Me and you both had Jahmyr Gibbs as the offensive player of the year. We were close, but I think Mayank won that one. I lost the defensive player of the year because I'm an idiot. And I thought Gardner Johnson was going to be a lot better. You guys had Hutch, which you guys probably win that one. So I'm like, what is it? I'm 0-2 on the props. I said surprise player of the year. We all got that wrong. I got Onwuzurike. You got Walker. Mayock had Broderick Martin. But you guys had Branches as the rookie of the year. So I think, because I think Laporta is the rookie of the year, to be honest. But. It's interesting to look back, and obviously we're gonna do a season recap next week. But Tyler, it's been a great year, and we'll be talking about the off season now. And yeah, sadly, yeah. The season's over. But
we'll have our sappy stuff right at our season recap next week. You know, we'll bring some. Everybody, bring your tissues, man.
No, there won't be no tissues. I think we'll get a good program down. But Yeah, if you're listening to this on Facebook or YouTube or whatever, you can go to Apple and Spotify to listen to the whole episode. It'll be uploaded probably about within the next hour and a half or whatever. But thank you to everyone who watched. And obviously, this is the end of the season, and it's a week. I don't know. I don't think people expect us to be in the NFC Championship game, so we're probably like a week later than we thought we'd be. But it's a great year, and we got to run it back next year. Hopefully, we're doing the same thing, Tyler. That's what we're hoping for. But next week we'll do the season recap. Thank you guys for watching throughout the season. We'll see you guys in the next podcast. Thank you again, and
peace out, guys.
Peace out.